we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Times, read by Caroline Nichols.
The teenage son of a Russian retail tycoon has been charged after he allegedly strangled his mother with a telephone cord while at a hotel to attend a workshop on the importance of family.
Our thanks to John Sampson for taking the time off work to email us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Mark Steele and Vicky Pepperdine. And opposite them on my left, Conservative peer Danny Finkelstein and Holly Walsh. So, Mark, who's had to renegotiate a renegotiation?
Well, I presume this is about David Cameron and his business in Europe, where it's so confusing for anybody because he sort of comes out and says things like, we have successfully renegotiated so that now Romanians will have to live in Britain for 9 years before they're allowed into a post office. And it's never enough. And then Farage will say, but there are still millions of Bulgarians over here using our pavements paid for by our taxpayers. Quite frankly, if they can't be bothered to just hover above them, they shouldn't be allowed here and they should be sent home. And then Cameron tries to come out with a more ridiculous one. And this is why it's so confusing, because from my point of view, I think, what am I going to vote? If I vote to stay in, well, then that's going to please David Cameron, and that is something that just turns your soul a dark, grimy shade of yellow and makes you sick up green, sticky liquid. But then if I vote to come out, then I'm going to be pleasing Farage. And surely pleasing Farage is illegal. It must be. So, I don't know, and that's the trouble with it. And I think this is what most of the country's doing. They're watching, they're thinking, what shall I do? And they go, oh, no, Blair's for staying in, I'm voting out. Oh, Duncan Smith's for voting out, I'm voting in. Oh, Farage is for out, I'm voting in. Whoever wins will be the one that just takes all their supporters off to Mexico for 3 months.
Do you agree with any of this, Danny?
Yeah, of course. I couldn't. It would be difficult to find any disagreement between service on anything, really. I did like Prince William getting himself all engaged into this renegotiation by accident, because I think, basically, if you end up endorsing the EU without actually saying anything about the EU, you become Foreign Secretary now. I think that's it.
I like the way that Kensington Palace stepped in very quickly and said, oh, we just want to say that the Prince didn't say what you think he might have said. He actually said the thing he didn't say, or something, you know. Massive apology straight away from Kensington Palace. And I thought, that's actually quite useful to have your address apologise for a mistake you made the night before, you know. So, you know, Vicky wasn't drunk and didn't insult her boss at the office party, said 72 Walton Road.
Who's causing Cameron trouble, then? Who are the V4 group?
That's the Visegrad Four.
The Visegrad Four. Yeah, they are not fugitives of justice or anything. They are Poland, Slovakia, Hungary and the Czech Republic.
Of course.
They have lots of things in common, and they're one of the sort of obstacles, I suppose, that Cameron would
it's
have
all,
to get past.
It's all just fake, isn't it? He's not going to, at the end of this, go, oh, do you know what? In the end, we couldn't agree. It's all fake. It's all going to be contrived, isn't it? It's like wrestling, isn't it? Going to be, you know, there's some people going, oh, it's not fake, it's real. You don't know who's going to win. He might come out with a negotiation with the Poles and the Slovaks. He might not. And all sensible people are going, oh, it's fixed.
Who is it fixed by? Which shadowy organisation?
Not shadowy organisation, is it? They're just sort of... They want Britain to stay in, so they're not... Merkel and all that's not going to allow Cameron to come back going, oh, those Germans, you know, so... But it's a wonder I'm not BBC political correspondent.
I think it's like a really bad episode of Don't Tell the Bride, where he's got 4 days to plan the perfect referendum, but will he get it right? And he's like, oh, God, I mean, she said she liked goth stuff, so we're going to do it all in bin bags.
What is the mood like around... you don't have to reveal stuff that professionally you're not allowed to, but close to the throne of power, the seat of power.
Bizarrely, I think there is a sort of suppressed air of panic, partly for the reasons that Mark suggested, which is everyone assumes he's going to get a deal, and actually, in fact, he might not, and then what would he say? So that is difficult, but we'll see very shortly whether he's succeeded in doing it. And he has set the bar so that he'll succeed. What's certainly true is not very many people are following the details. So
it's very confusing.
Well,
there was a news report a couple of nights ago where they interviewed a couple who were anti-EU, and they were in the pub in a, I think it was a village somewhere called Middle England or something. And the guy literally said, "We don't want to be in the EU because we don't want the criminals." I mean, his wife looked a bit panicky and said, "We don't mind the doctors and the nurses coming over." And you could see him think, "Oh, they could be criminals too."
It's all that, isn't it? For all of this sort of intricate stuff that they sort of present on the news, at the end of it, the argument is just going to be so puerile. It's going to be like the Daily Express with a front page saying something like, "Now the French want to standardise breasts." They're going to make women's breasts, those stupid petite French Gallic ones, instead of the proper British buxom ones that we're used to. It's all going to be that. Now the Germans have said, now they're going to ruin agriculture. They're going to reclassify cows as herrings and make farmers throw cattle in the rivers.
Gosh, it's amazing to hear what keeps you awake at night, Mark. Who this week branded Britain a cake-filled, misery-laden, grey old island?
Emma Thompson.
The actress Emma
Thompson. Yes, I know the headline in The Sun was "Shut Your Cake Hole."
The communist Britain hater and Oscar-winning tireless charity campaigner, Emma Thompson. Salubriously, this is David Cameron's somewhat stressful week as he scurried around Belgium holding an important document in scenes reminiscent of one of Hergé's rather more tedious Adventures of Tintin. Some of the controversial aspects of the proposed deal include restrictions on child benefit, an emergency break to limit in-work benefits, for more economic protection of EU members outside the Eurozone, and for all of continental Europe to declare allegiance to David Cameron, who will then become emperor. Just a few niggling points there. I'm sure they'll sort out soon enough. Prince William made a speech this week where he appeared to back the UK staying in Europe, although one can't help feeling that in the good old days he could have sorted out all of our diplomatic problems simply by marrying a 9-year-old Spanish princess. Still, it was a fascinating insight into his views, or at least the views of whoever wrote those words on a piece of paper, slapped him twice on the buttocks and shoved him in the general direction of a lectern. 2 points to Mark. Vicky, where is sugar causing a stir?
This is about the amount of sugar in high street coffee shop drinks. Apparently, there's loads more sugar in a high street coffee shop drink than we ever dreamt in our wildest dreams. Even though you can't actually stand your spoon up in it, you practically can. So, I mean, when they mention hot drinks with lots of sugar, I just immediately thought of Builder's Tea, you know, sort of put six of those in for me, love. So I thought, well, that's just a British tradition. But then it turns out that actually it's a lot more sugar than that. And, you know, I mean, I was astonished, really, to be honest with you, because I go in there 3 or 4 times a day, and I was really surprised to discover that my choco toffee caramello fudger butter latte skinny butter latte actually had about 25 spoonfuls of sugar in it.
What I can't find amazing was when first of all the Starbucks spokesperson said, "Well, obviously these things are absolutely fine as part of a balanced diet." There's enough sugar in one of them for 3 lifetimes. For a balanced diet, you'd have to have sipped a third of it, left it in your will to your kids, then they have the next cup, and then your grandkids have a cup. Then, unless it balanced... And then they said, well, we're
trying... I like to think you can offset anything if you eat enough roughage.
And then it was, we are trying because we are committed to reducing the amount of sugar, like it's some huge engineering problem. How do we reduce the amount of sugar that we're shoveling in? I just don't know. If only Brunel was still alive, there's some clue as to how we can put less sugar in. We get up every morning, get a forklift truck, put 4 pallets of sugar in a huge great cup, scrammed with squashed caramel and marshmallows and whipped cream and concentrated Jaffa cakes, deep fried in boiled aero, and we just can't work out how we're going to put less sugar in it.
Holly, you're a young mother. You're presumably going to lots of coffee shops with other young mothers at the moment.
You patronising arsehole.
I can see that.
I'm back at work like you are.
I can see that's an impressive start to take, but half an hour ago I said, oh, you're a member of an NCT group. And you go, yeah, yeah, we go out for coffee all the time. So I said... you disingenuous bitch. if it's all the same with you. but I mean, are you drinking quite a lot of...
Honestly, haven't read the paper. I've been too busy in Nero, but I get so annoyed by those places, though. All of them, those sort of coffee shops. You know, when they give you those loyalty cards and they go, "You buy 9 coffees from us, we'll give you one free," and they call it a loyalty card. And that annoys me because it's not really, it's not loyalty. It's just a deal. Like if it was loyalty, they'd be like, "You buy 9 coffees from us and you kill someone, you can hide out in any of our branches."
But why then, there's a lot of talk then about the sugar tax, or we've certainly spoken about it before on this programme. What is the government rumoured to be doing about the campaign?
Well, apparently they're not going to implement the sugar tax. Well, this is the rumour, that the plan to have a sugar tax is being abandoned, and there's a lot of people jumping up and down, partly from the sugar rush, obviously from the high street coffee, but also people objecting to the fact that he's not going to implement this sugar tax, and people are saying he's kowtowing to the sugar barons who live on Sugar Mountain. and so there's a big furore about that.
So is it not going to happen, Danny, the sugar tax?
But I think in the end it will, actually. But I think it'll take some time, yeah. Because I think there's that everyone thinks it's a good idea. And in the end, it'll break down the resistance to it, which is only the thought that people will have to pay for it who haven't got very much money. And that's the concern, which is obviously a proper concern. But in the end, I think people will see the advantage.
Well, the government doesn't take that attitude with anything else, do they? They say, oh, it's such a shame that crack is so expensive. I mean, it's the poor that have the crack.
Well, I reckon that, you know, the coffee chains will find a way of getting out of paying the tax because they're quite good at that anyway, at least some of them. And they'll say, oh, you know, it's not sugar anymore because it's dissolved. So technically it's a different compound, so sorry, we're not paying it anyway.
And, yes, sugar is solid. This is a liquid. You can't tax us for this.
Indeed, indeed.
So I've literally never had a coffee in Starbucks or Nero or anything because all I drink is Diet Coke. It's all I drink at any time.
A much healthier option.
I had so many cans of Diet Coke in the fridge in Conservative Central Office that I caused an explosion.
Really?
It was all those women at 11 o'clock who were like, Diet Coke break.
Oh, it's 11 o'clock. This is when Lord Finkelstein comes with Diet Coke.
Let's pretend the lift's broken, see if it can help us.
Let's make our windows really murky so he has to clean them with his top off.
Are we picturing the scene correctly, Danny?
That is exactly what happened.
Deliciously, this is the story that hot drinks from high street chains have been found to contain shocking levels of sugar. The lobby group Action on Sugar analysed 131 hot drinks, where they made 2 breakthrough discoveries. Firstly, that they contain dangerously high sugar levels, and secondly, that drinking 131 hot drinks will make you urinate non-stop for over 25 agonising hours. The worst offending drinks in question include the grape with chai, orange and cinnamon, the pumpkin spice latte and the caramel macchiato venti, proving at long last a direct link between levels of sugar and of insufferable smugness. Presumably this means that Starbucks' notorious inability to pronounce your name correctly is actually a foretaste of how you'll be pronouncing it after your inevitable stroke. Just a bit of fun. 2 points to Vicky. Danny, who got a bad report because their inmates failed to report?
That was the Victorian Welford Road Jail in Leicester, which is one of Britain's most overcrowded jails, and it had an inspection report in 2013 and just had another one, and it basically said that inmates find it easier to get hands on drugs and alcohol than on basic toiletries and a change of clothes, although we did have a shopping centre like that in Hendon. My favourite thing about the Leicester Mercury story, it did say there were some compliments. Overall support for drug-addicted inmates was good. And then it said 14% of people had developed a drug problem since going to jail, and the chief executive of the Offender Management Service called this disappointing, which I think is quite a good phrase. So it's a very bad report.
Wasn't there a thing where they didn't know where 30 of them were, of the inmates?
That's right, yeah. They were slightly surprised. It was sort of like they weren't told that there was going to be an inspection, so they were slightly caught on the hop. And they said, where are all the inmates? And they said, well, we don't know where all of them are.
Although basically,
they've gone home for the day or something.
Yeah. A lot of these people live locally. They've got people visiting.
The big problem with prisons actually used to be basically people getting out, and now the big problem they have is stopping people and things getting in. And they're very difficult. It's very difficult to do.
Do you know a lot about the prison system, Danny?
I wouldn't describe myself as an expert, but it's certainly sort of.
But certainly
important.
A fan. Yeah. what's David Cameron said about prisons recently?
He's on the reform. He wants to reform them. This is his big thing, isn't it? At the end of his tenure, he wants to reform prisons. One of my favourite things was that he went to. Is it Onley? Is that how you say it? The prison, HMP Onley.
I really don't know, Danny. You're our prison guy.
Yes.
But he went there and apparently he was impressed because inmates were trained in bike repair and barista skills. And I thought, are they training them to be hipsters?
He wants to reform prisons. He wants to build a 6 super prisons, which is super in the sense of big, not super as in smashing.
It'll be all the words that my mum uses to describe a Christmas present that she didn't really want. Oh, smashing. Super.
Oh, what a useful prison. Oh, we'll get a lot of use out of this prison, won't we?
It's a bit tight.
Have a prison like this.
Do they have a bigger size?
He also said ex-offenders may not have to reveal their criminal record when applying for jobs. So people just have to sort of sit there and explain.
I think that's good. I think that is right.
Well, there'll be a situation where we go, so how did you get your nickname, Strangler Bob? Skull Duggerously, this is the news that an inspection into Leicester Prison reported that there were high levels of violence, regular attacks on staff, and drugs and alcohol were readily available. So pretty much like Centre Parks without the wife swapping. In December last year, there was an incident in which inmates demolished the walls between their cells. But if you watch daytime TV for 8 hours at a stretch, the pressure to do some home improvement and knock through a kitchen diner becomes absolutely overwhelming. In the prison, as in the home, it's all a question of creating a sense of space.
If they've got the capability of knocking down a wall, that's pretty dumb to knock down the wall that just takes you to the next cell, isn't it?
I'd like to give a big shout-out, by the way, to any prisoners listening. I know that the News Quiz is very popular on the wing. In fact, most of the cuttings we read out are simply coded messages to the outside world from... from Hard and Lags. Do keep sending them in, chaps. I only hope your contacts on the outside can make more sense of them than we can.
He's read one out from the Romford Observer. That's the signal to go. Come on, boys.
2 points to Danny... And at the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Vicky have 4, but Danny and Holly have 5. We start round two with an advert scene in the Wealden Advertiser.
Over 60s Foot Clinic. Come in for a foot spa, exfoliation, and have your toenails cut over a nice cup of tea.
Our thanks to Malcolm Williams in Bexhill for sending us that coded message. Mark, who made a dazzling return home?
Oh, this just terrifies me, this sort of thing, because planes are just wrong, in my view. You convince yourself, no, it's all science and everything, and all these people, they go all over the world and they come back in the planes, it's just air and all that. And then things like this happen. This is someone shone a laser at the plane and the pilot was temporarily blinded. And then it was a Virgin plane and it had to turn back. Oh, if I was on that plane, oh, no. We would like to reassure passengers that everything is fine, but the pilot has been blinded by a laser. We will be turning around. He'll be sort of feeling his way through Braille. Don't worry about a thing. And we've all got to go sometime. just terrifying.
This happened... well, it happens more than you might think. Do you mean how...
Oh, no! Happens all the time!
There were 9,000 incidents in the last 6 years.
That is absolutely right,
because people are getting their hands on these laser pointers, similar to what you have in offices presentation. It sort of worries me. I mean, I wonder what other... Before they got to laser, what other office equipment they were using. Maybe a pilot was distracted by an overhead projector.
Basically, they're so unbelievably dangerous, and it is amazing that you can just buy them easily on the internet. I tried when this story came out. Yes, I tried you it.
Just to see whether you could do it.
And basically,
was it you? Wasn't you that did it?
2,000 milliwatt blue laser, high-powered thing for, like, £70. And it said 57% off fire sale.
So you've got one of these.
I didn't actually buy it, but I just was fascinated by the fact that something so unbelievably lethal, by the way, it has absolutely no purpose whatsoever. I tried finding out what could you use one of these for.
Well, long-distance learning courses.
These things are that lethal, then why did, like, ISIS bother going to all the trouble of getting all those surface-to-air missiles? They could just get one of these 75-quid things, sit around in Afghanistan...
Well, now you've just given them that idea.
Yeah.
You are no friend of the West.
No. They listen to the news quiz for relaxation.
Sinuously, this is the tale of a Virgin Atlantic flight forced to abandon its path to New York after the pilot was temporarily blinded by what is believed to have been a laser pointer. The plane got as far as Ireland before having to turn back, much like the Enlightenment. What... What would the Dambusters have done, I wonder? They would have made us proud to be British, that's what. They'd have flown on, they'd have dropped their bombs, which history has proven to be somewhat ineffective, and then flown gloriously home to their racist dog. Half of pilots have been on board a plane targeted by lasers in the last 12 months. And while it's obviously dangerous, a small number of these incidents lead to the pilot's short-sightedness being cured, which means he or she can leave their glasses behind and go on to find true love as their self-confidence blossoms. 2 points to Mark. Holly, who wants to ring in some sporting changes?
Oh, this is the... I don't know what they're called, the National Society of Bell Ringers or the Campanology Group, whatever. They want bell ringing to be classed as a sport and not a pastime, which I think is one of the more important pressing matters of our age. And... I find it amazing that they want it to be a sport. I mean, it is quite good for your upper arms, apparently, bell ringing.
I get cross about this. Sport's got to be an element of competition about it. You can't just have... If you say anything's a sport that people can just judge, then absolutely, you might as well have painting and decorating as a sport and have all these... Always got all the corners, 5.8. It's...
It's stupid, isn't it?
Anything can be a sport.
Yeah, but wouldn't you like to see some sort of like Premier League for bell ring? I mean, I'd love to see Wells Cathedral go to Europe. That would be...
What a couple of rings from the plucky underdogs from Wells. But in the end, the class of Notre Dame shone through. With Gary Neville or something, all them little things where they put... what's he doing there? You know, if you ever watch the sort of the... after the commentary and then the football pundits, they have...
They
move people around. And I always think that should be a whole programme and it should be just called, What's He Doing There? They spend about 20 minutes... And, right, if we have a look at the centre-back, what's he doing there? He should be there, but he's there. And look at the goalkeeper. He's come out from there. He should be... What's he doing there? Look at this guy in the crowd. He's in the wrong seat. What's he doing there? He should be there, and the referee's there when he should be there. What's he doing there? That's all for this week. Come back tomorrow for the next episode of What's He Doing There?
I suppose their supporters might be like the congregation, would they, following them around, kind of going, ring your bell, ring your bell, ring your bell. Here we go, he's going home in a freaking ambulance.
Yeah, imagine if it was a sport that you could get steroid abuse.
Yes, terrible news for Campanology today. All around the world, people absolutely rocked by the Turkish team having been sent home for failing the drugs test.
We should have known. We could hear them from London.
Campanologically, this is the move by bell ringers to have bell ring officially classed as a sport. Readers of Ringing World, and let's face it, who isn't, insist the church activity is an art and a sport, hoping to get it into the same bracket as Impressionist sit-ups and pre-Raphaelite judo. Ringing enthusiast Ted Venn said making ringing a sport could save it from becoming obsolete, although given that it's withstood the invention of the clock and the diary, I reckon it's probably here to stay. Bell-ringing sessions can last as long as 3 hours or less if those taking part suddenly realise how tedious it is. Two points to Holly. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Mark?
This was in The Independent this week. This says, Cleveland teenage footballer Brian Garuto has been dismissed from the league, the reasons given in an email that reads, Hello, Mr. Garuto. After a meeting with management, we have banned you from our league because of your behaviour, such as wearing a cowboy hat during the game, pretending to give birth to the ball after scoring, pretending to shoot a bow and arrow at opposing players, and getting sent off and then changing jerseys and attempting to play the rest of the match while pretending to be someone else.
Vicky.
This one is from Orlando Murrin, who said, I thought listeners might enjoy the combination of the headline and the sub-headline. And it's from the Jersey Evening Post, and it says, Thursday, name your dog poo hotspots. And then underneath it, it says, over 60 jobs.
Danny.
Anna Corden saw this notice at the reception desk of the Riverside Outpatients Clinic in Ipswich. It says, for blood tests, please follow the red dots on the floor next to the exit sign.
Holly.
And this one is from Mark Emptage from Llandudno, and this is a Talk Talk TV listing. It says, 8 o'clock, Shark Attack, California. 8:30, 2.5 men.
Thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Mark and Vicky have 9, but this week's winners are Danny and Holly with 12. Before we leave you, here is an extract from the newsletter sent out by Richard Harrington MP.
We understand that there have been some unfounded rumours going around concerning the closure of the 142 and 258 bus routes. We're very glad to be able to confirm that these bus services are going absolutely nowhere.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Mark Steele, Vicky Pepperdine, Danny Finkelstein and Holly Walsh. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair's script was written by James Bugg, James Kettle and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Alex Lynch. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Radio Comedy production.